Good afternoon, and here we are. Welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Good afternoon.
Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year to you. It is a new year, isn't it?
Since the last time we were on the air here.
That's right. Much has happened.
A lot has happened.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
It's very good. 2004 is looking good already.
Yes, and almost nearly a week has passed.
That's right. And we're still having fun.
Yes.
Yeah. That's good.
Great.
We had a wonderful retreat in Carmel. Some of the most amazing weather that I've ever experienced, especially for California. And, and we all survived, and it was grand. And then we did on Sunday, your best year yet, our annual, I think we determined it's our fifth annual workshop to set up our best year yet, and that was great fun, and now here we are.
That's great.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, the best year yet for me is it's a great program for mm-hmm. bringing together spiritual life in a goal-setting, planning way.
Yeah. Sometimes people say, you're talking about goals. How can that be Zen practice? Isn't Zen being in the moment? And it is. But if we're the point that Jan makes quite beautifully, if we're just in the moment with no idea what our life is about, what's important to us, what we want to take a stand for or represent or that sort of thing, if we have no intention about the life that we choose, then forces other than our conscious, compassionate awareness are perfectly willing and eager to come in and take over our lives.
Yes.
So if we have a process for coming back to the moment and saying, now, what is it that I want my life to be about? Ah, that's right. I want kind, loving relationships. I want meaningful work. I want to support a community of people who share a perspective that I have and that sort of thing. Then I'm reminded on a daily basis that it would be good to come to center and come to the present moment in order to live that life that I choose. So it's I find it extremely compatible and helpful, and
mm-hmm.
I know you do too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which is why we do it every year.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. And it would be good for people to call in if they wanted to talk about that or mm-hmm. any other topic in this new year.
That's right. Anything else that's going on in this new year.
Yes.
One of the things that we do at the New Year's retreat, as you well know, is a practice of ending one year the way we want the next year to go. I suppose that's an old superstition that's turned into possibly something more along the lines of an intention.
Mm-hmm.
So we always meditate in the new year and attempt to be as present and thoughtful and in as much compassionate awareness as we can as we start the new year with the idea that this is how we want it to go. We're leaving that one with an attitude of mind of kindness, and we're coming into the new one with the same attitude of mind. And so maybe this radio show could set the same intention that we want to be in communication, we want it to be conscious and compassionate, we want it to be representative of who we are and who we choose to be. So
yes.
It's a good way to start the year.
Sounds wonderful. And if they want to be in communication with us today, please call us at 650-723-9010. We'd love to hear from you. The phone lines are waiting for you here. And if you'd like to reach us by email as well, you can send an email to openair@kzsu.org. And as many of you know, the archives of all of our shows are on Sherry's website, which is sherryhuber.com, and that's spelled CHERIHUBER.com. So please go ahead and give us a call if you'd like to be in conversation with us today. And Sherry, in fact, people have been using our email address with some regularity.
Wonderful.
And I have a couple of email questions
here.
It's
the kind of thing that we want to be used.
Yes.
Yes. Frequently
yes.
and well.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Hello, Sherry and Michael. I've read many of your books, and they have helped me a great deal. And I listen to your radio show from the online archives. I'd like first to say thank you for the wonderful work you do to make these ideas available to people. I live in England, and your show is broadcast during my night, so I'll use email instead of staying up to ask my question. I'd like to ask for your comments on something that for me is a central drama in my life. It's about creativity and the notion of, quote, doing stuff. Often I hear you say that the secret is not to, quote, do stuff, but just to, quote, be present. I seem to hover around two sides of doing, not doing in my life, and cannot find a way to, quote, not do that works with the rest of my life. I think the trick is to just allow these parts of me that live this way to do what they do and just notice them. But, and here's the real issue, when I do that, I'm living in a way that doesn't feel good. If living in the moment involves noticing rather than doing stuff, where does doing stuff come from? My life is built around, quote, doing stuff. Do I just accept that and notice that? This big question is something I struggle with over and over. I think there is more in it than the obvious self-hatred, but I would welcome your thoughts on this. With warmth.
Great.
Yes.
Great. A question for all of us, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Something we can all probably relate to quite well.
Yes.
And the thing that comes immediately to my mind when I look at this subject is one of my favorite quotes of all time, which you probably I could say what it is as well as I.
Yes.
It's from the Hindu tradition, and it is, "No deed there is, no doer thereof." So there is nothing to do, nothing that is being done, and no one doing it. And that can leave us in a place of, the writer is sounds like can struggle with, of, okay, what does that mean? Do I just grab my meditation cushion and sit on it for the rest of my life? Do I?
Yes.
How do I do that? How do I eat? How do I make a living? How do I pay the rent? And I think what the quote is pointing at is something more along the lines of taking the reins out of the hands of what I talk about as egocentric karmic conditioning. So that illusion of a separate self who is going to inflict its will on life, who's going to decide how things are going to go, when they're going to go, what they're going to look like, who's going to take control and be in charge and make it happen. Okay, that's definitely a doer thereof. That's operating outside of life and forcing life to bend to the will of the ego,
mm-hmm.
which is, produces a great deal of drama. It's terribly difficult and fraught with suffering and misery, and usually, you know, wears a person out and drives them to something like Zen awareness practice. The alternative is not what in Zen is called quietism, where we just sort of sit there and twiddle our thumbs and wait for somebody to come and evict us because we're incapacitated by this idea of, well, if I am not doing something, if I am not making things happen, then nothing will happen, mm-hmm. nothing will get done. Mm-hmm. And so for an idea of what it's like to let life live, I like to follow a three-year-old around or find a dog and mm-hmm. just kind of follow it around for an
yes.
hour or so.
Yes.
Now, these are busy, busy creatures,
yes.
and they're from this to this to this to this to this with great enthusiasm.
Yes.
But there's not that illusion of a separate self directing it. They're really going where life leads them.
Yes.
Now, we're not, most of us, 3 years old or operating in dog's bodies, so we bring to it also an active intelligence and awareness, sensitivity to our environment. We also bring karmic predisposition and tendencies and that sort of thing. And we bring to it the ability to experience ourselves as outside of life or separate from life. So we're constantly moving back and forth, whether we realize it or not, between what we talk about as center, which is non-separate reality connected with life in that no doer thereof place. So it's just doing the next thing that life calls forth. So it's time to go to work, so I get up, I take a shower, I eat my breakfast, I brush my teeth, I put on my clothes, I get in my car, I go to work. And then there's whatever work calls forth. I need to do this, I need to do that, I need to talk to those people, I go to that meeting, I do this, and then it's time for lunch. And so I have lunch, and so it's going through the day, living the life that life is calling me to live.
Mm-hmm.
What's not required in that is this illusion of a separate self out here in karmic conditioning with a running monologue about, I need to do this, it needs to be that way, what's the matter with you, why did you do this, this is never going to work, I can't believe you did that, why didn't you do this, well, go ahead, just why don't you just make those phone calls now, and why don't you just put that off, postpone it, you don't actually need to, cancel that meeting and go to, okay, that's the part that most folks spend most of their time operating out of.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the part that is completely unnecessary to life and causes a great deal of suffering.
Mm-hmm.
So when we can just be with life, doing fully, with two hands and a whole heart, whatever it is that is the thing for us to be doing right now, life is very easy and doesn't contain a great deal of suffering. As soon as we slip out of center and out into that world of karmic conditioning, that's where the drama, that's where the misery, that's where the I, me, my, thrill of victory, agony of defeat, whole mess happens. And to me, awareness practice is simply sorting out the difference between those two. So that I can live here at center, living the life that life is calling me to live, wholeheartedly, with all of my conscious awareness and attention, and avoiding the pitfalls of egocentric karmic conditioning and drama.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. So when we're here in the moment, paying attention to what life has brought for us to do, we're there and we're doing it. And when we project in the future into the past, lots of suffering.
Lots of suffering. And as you point out, the past and the future belong to egocentric karmic conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
Egocentric karmic conditioning does not exist in the present.
Mm-hmm.
So as long as we are in the present, then we are doing what is ours to do in life.
Mm-hmm.
And it can include and does include everything. The wonderful thing about being present is that life is spacious. There's plenty of room in the present to do whatever it is that actually needs to be done.
Mm-hmm.
I have just gone through the most amazing workshop on this subject. I mentioned that I was at Carmel on retreat,
mm-hmm.
and came out of that all-day workshop on Sunday, and got back to Calaveras County late Sunday night. Then I leave tonight for Italy. I mean, I'm stopping over in North Carolina to do an evening bookstore appearance at Malaprops Bookstore, if anybody's listening and would like to get to Malaprops Bookstore in Asheville, and then a day-long workshop on Saturday. And then on Monday afternoon, I go to Italy. Now, there is not enough time from Sunday night to leaving this evening to catch a plane tomorrow morning to do all of the things that need to get done. There's just not enough time.
Mm-hmm.
And the list is enormous. And I'm looking at it thinking, this is not possible. It's never going to happen. It's never going to work. It is never going to work. And as I'm going through it, this thing falls away. That thing doesn't need to be done.
Mm-hmm.
This thing smooths out.
Mm-hmm.
This person helps me with that. That person helps me with that.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly, you know, the path just opens before me. And an hour before I'm to talk to you, I'm packed, the bags are in the car, and as soon as I stop talking to you, I walk out, get in the car, and and get ready to leave on the trip. As long as I'm out there in, this is never going to work, this is not going to happen, affirming that, setting the intention of that,
yes.
Amazingly enough, it doesn't. It
yes.
doesn't work. And to let go of that and to just get with the, okay, what's the next thing that needs to be done? What's the next thing? You know, this is why there are places like monasteries and why monasteries have strict and what people would think of as rigid schedules. They're designed
yes.
to keep us in the moment focused on what's actually going on rather than turning the day over to conditioning, who's going to say, okay, you need to do this and this and this and this and this and this and that, and you need to take care of this and this, and then as soon as that's all in place, sets about sabotaging the whole endeavor.
Amazing.
It's fun to watch.
Yes, it is fun to watch.
It's great to, for me, every time I have one of these kinds of opportunities to see how it works, there's a little more liberation on the subject.
Yes. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on KZSU Stanford. Please feel free to give us a call and join our conversation about doing and not doing and any other related topic. You can reach us at 650-723-9010. Sherry, another thing that occurred to me about the email question is it seems that conditioned mind doesn't really care what we agonize over or suffer over.
Oh, good point.
As long as we're doing that.
That's right. As long as we're out of the moment, suffering and agonizing about something, conditioned mind is busy, it's alive, it's in charge, it's in control, it's center stage, and it's happy. No matter how much it's complaining, it's happy.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Sherry, I have another email question here.
Wonderful.
And it's on a similar topic. Hello, I've been looking at how I decide to do things and how action arises, and I've noticed that I'll have a thought that suggests something to me, and it may be so compelling, I stop whatever I'm doing now to go do the new thing. This can cause me not to finish things.
Mm-hmm.
Even if I write it down to do later, I'm beginning to wonder, how do I decide which thoughts to listen to and what to do? Are thoughts the source of our actions? How can I make decisions or decide what I should be doing when thought changes so often? Is there some other source of action, and how can I find it?
Isn't that good? Oh, is there more?
Do you have one more sentence?
Okay.
I love your show and appreciate that you make yourself available to everyone out here.
Well, that's very kind.
Yes.
And again, now this is as far as I can tell, universal. I bet there's not a human being that doesn't know that experience. And for me, again, this is the magic of doing awareness practice. And we can do these things on a very small scale because what we're doing is practicing principles. So I think it was Thoreau who said, once you understand a principle, you don't have to have example after example. So all we need to do is, and the writer has obviously watched this enough.
Yes.
To realize this is an ongoing activity, and it doesn't lead to success. Because things get left undone, they're not gone back to.
Mm-hmm.
It's just kind of if we use that dog image again, if you go for a walk with a dog who's not on a leash, then you are following that dog's nose around through the world, right?
Yes.
And it just sniff here and then goes over there, and then that it catches a scent of that, and that looks interesting, and over there, and it's great in that way of just doing the next thing. However, the dog doesn't have the same intention to complete things that a human being tends to have.
Yes.
So if we go through life that way, then we wind up in that place of feeling more jerked around than free to go to the next thing. And of course, California has a really bad reputation in a lot of the world for producing people who have that just caught by the next thing. I was
yes.
listening to an essay by someone who was talking about the curse of cell phones. mm-hmm. related to this. So mm-hmm. you and I are going to get together, but we don't need to make plans more than about 30 seconds ahead, because if anything changes, we can call each other on our cell phones.
Yes.
Yeah, so there's no sense in making an arrangement to meet next Saturday, because, gosh, you know, we can, there'll be so many things that are going to come up between now and then, and we can be in constant communication, so why plan anything? And
yes.
that's not what we're going for with awareness practice. So what the writer can do is just check this out in a very defined sort of a way. So there's an hour, and in that hour, so I, between 6 and 7 at night, I am going to do X, and that's what I'm going to do. That's my plan.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I plan this in such a way that, short of, you know, somebody calling with a medical emergency, there's really nothing else that needs to draw me away.
Mm-hmm.
I have the time. It's fine. And so I decide what I'm going to do. I'm going to, maybe I'm going to fix dinner and eat dinner and wash up the dishes and maybe, what, listen to some music or something. And it's safe. It's fine. It's not, you know, it's nothing harmful.
Yes.
Nothing that conditioning needs to be worried about that I'm going to get in trouble doing these things. And it would serve me. It's a good plan. These are things that would be helpful in my life to do. And so I set it up for this time slot, and then I watch how conditioned mind tries to distract me.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Or maybe I'm going to do yoga and meditate, whatever activity it is, between 6 and 7 at night. And then I watch how conditioned mind tries to pull me away. And what I'm going to do during that time is stick to whatever it is that I decided to do. Because what I know is these are good things to do. There's nothing harmful in it. There's nothing that I would be doing that is inherently better than what I've chosen. I've chosen something out of my own life. Okay, so I'm not choosing to do something that you want me to do. I'm choosing these things because they serve me.
Yes.
Okay? So when the voice comes up that says, yeah, but it would be so much better to, or it would be so much more fun, or what you really need to get done, or what you should focus on instead, I can know that is a voice simply designed to pull me out of the moment, away from what I'm doing, confuse me, throw me off, get me lulled into some kind of state where I can be manipulated and controlled by what in practice we call better ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And in watching that process in that kind of control environment, I can begin to recognize the voices, what they do to me, how I respond to them, how I get caught up believing them, and how really not helpful it is in my life to follow them around.
Mm-hmm.
And then I can learn to trust myself, stay with myself, go with the program that I've selected. Now, obviously, I've decided to come home, fix dinner, eat dinner, do the laundry while I'm, you know, start the laundry, blah, blah, blah. And my best friend calls and says that somebody has just gone to the hospital and is asking for me. All right? I'm going to go.
Yes.
I'm not going to say, well, now I've made plans tonight to do the laundry and listen to some music, so I'll need to, you know. But there are very few occasions in life that demand that sort of immediate
mm-hmm.
action.
Mm-hmm.
And so part of during that time, I might decide to turn the ringer off the phone or screen calls if I'm a really nervous type, and I'm not going to answer any call that's not an emergency.
Yes.
Yeah. So
yes.
We can play with it and test it out. We don't have to say, okay, I'm going to do this in all of my life, because the anxiety would, you know, throw a person into deciding never to be aware of anything again.
Yes.
So little tiny experiments.
Yes. Yes. And as you suggested, setting up a plan to do something that's in our best interests
mm-hmm.
and seeing what comes up in resistance to that.
Yeah. Setting it up for the express purpose of watching what happens.
Yes.
In most of life, we're just going along. We haven't brought this kind of conscious awareness to it, And then we're just really at the mercy of whatever voice is there with the most convincing argument. And it's seeing through that that is the important thing, because then, you know, there's a parallel process to me with this. A lot of people struggle with, what do I eat? When do I eat it? How do I know? What's enough? What's too much? Should I just make rules never to eat anything with sugar in it? You know, just cut all caffeine. What? And it's that same sort of process of being at the mercy of conditioned voices that we don't recognize as conditioned voices. Uh-huh. So is this my heart, or is this just conditioned mind throwing stuff out to try to put a monkey wrench in my life? Mm-hmm. What we can learn to do is stop. You know, it's time to eat something. And I stop, and I look inside, and I say, in essence, body, what do you want?
Mm-hmm.
And the body will respond. Now, at first, ego responds, conditioned mind responds. I want this, I want this, I want this, I want this, this whole list, okay? So maybe I give myself a range of choices in the beginning. You know, I can have anything off of column A, and then I practice. What does the body want? And then there's the response, and I see what happens, and I watch how the voices try to come up and talk me out of that and say, oh, no, da 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 da. But I am going with this to see what happens. And after a while, I can do that anywhere, anytime. I can just turn to my body, ask it what it wants, what would feel good to it, and trust that's the choice, that's a good choice for me. And it is a good choice, regardless of how the voices might come in afterwards to say, oh, well, this or that or... Yeah. So again, what we're learning is, am I at center? Am I listening to my heart? Or am I out here as with an illusion of separate self in egocentric karmic conditioning? Where am I coming from? And these little experiments help us to sort out who we're listening to, what the voices are, where the voices are coming from, and what leads us toward suffering and what leads us away from suffering.
Yes. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on KZSU Stanford. I'm your host, Michael Gray. If you'd like to join our conversation today, please give us a call. You can reach us at 650-723-9010. Coming up at 6 p.m. today, we have DJ Decca. She plays some great world music. That show is called At the Cafe Bohemian. 8 to 10 p.m., John will be on the air. And then the Bot of Euphony will round out the end of our day from 10 p.m. to midnight. Please feel free to give us a call if you want to talk with us today. We're going to take a break, and we'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to Open Air with Sherry Huber. I'm your host, Michael Gray. Sherry, the phones are ringing here.
Excellent.
Great. I'd like to welcome John from L.A. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Hi. How are you?
Hi, John.
Hi.
I spoke with you guys a few weeks ago.
Yes.
And I have amazing call-in karma with you guys.
Great.
I seem to be able to get on straight away, which is, it's the only smooth-going karma that I can look forward to.
I bet people can't say that with talk of the nation.
Oh, well, I feel this is pretty extraordinary that I can get through so easily, so I'm very appreciative.
Good.
When we'd spoken last, I don't know if you remember, we talked and you'd said to notice the process of trying to intellectualize the experience.
Yes. I do remember that.
And it seems to sort of fall into the theme you guys were just talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've been practicing quite a bit and noticing that it seems to get quite in the way of actually just being present.
Uh-huh.
being smart doesn't have a lot of advantages sometimes, I think, when the experience is challenging.
Yes. You know, Ram Dass's teacher used to kind of chide him or chastise him or sort of get on him a little bit. By pointing out how clever he was.
Yeah, I've experienced that in the Buddhist community for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
A sense that, but there's always that sort of that doubting Thomas aspect of me.
Uh-huh.
That I think is more interested in just keeping me in suffering in any way. Because that's what in practice the last few weeks, that's what the experience has been like.
Yeah, yeah. So my image of that is you're out in the middle of the ocean, and that part of you is checking for leaks in the boat by poking holes and you know, kind of seeing if this spot is weak and that spot is weak, and what if that just could break through with just this little bit of pressure?
I seem to want to be able to reason my way through, you know, some pretty I'm experiencing a lot of challenges in my life at this point, and not that anybody else isn't, or that the holiday season doesn't, you know, bring that specific energy up for a lot of people, but I was, you know, just experiencing a lot of sense of depression and trying to work my way and be a little bit more present and gentle through it. And my tendency is to want to reason my way through. I don't feel good. I'm tired. I'm trying. I don't want to take care of my son tonight. I don't want to work tomorrow. I would like to just relax and not be worried about all these things. And mm-hmm. And then I sort of realized that this sort of churning voice in my head.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
No, I'm sorry.
Well, that's not a problem, is it? If there's someone there who has a larger perspective than that person.
Yeah.
So how old is your son?
11.
Okay, so he doesn't feel like going to school. You know, I don't feel like it. I don't want to. It's boring, and I'm tired, and I don't.
We had that talk yesterday.
Yeah, I don't want to go. And as the dad in this situation, your job is to create a larger context. So, you know, you don't slap him around. You don't tell him that makes him a bad, wrong person. You just are understanding. I know that place. I feel that way myself sometimes. And it's just how life is. It's just what we got to do.
You just quoted our conversation yesterday.
Uh-huh, yeah. And so it's being in that same relationship with you instead of believing that you are the one saying those things.
Yeah, I think that's the challenge, because my ability, I guess, what's the Buddhist word? Maitri, self-compassion?
Mm-hmm.
I have a great deal of difficulty with that.
Yeah, I always does. You know, what you're describing really is classic.
Mm.
I mean, it's thinking that who you are is egocentric karmic conditioning, and then because of being identified with that, speaking from that as if that is unusual.
Mm. So if I'm experiencing depression and I'm trying to... Well, I'm not trying, actually. It's interesting. In your depression book, you talk about doing what you can to find your way out of it, or not. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure I'm using the correct words, but doing everything you can to understand everything about depression, so mm-hmm. that you can find. And I think I assume that in my process that's what I'm doing, but I'm not sure I'm actually succeeding in that.
Yes. So if your son were suffering from depression.
Mm.
I doubt that you would say, okay, well, just take him to a doctor. Okay, just get something for him. Just get over it.
No, I'm not comfortable with that.
That's right. You would become an expert on depression in children.
Mm.
You would read everything. You would talk to everybody. You would know what drugs were there and what they did and what the side effects were and their efficacy and what happens with children who have gone on this program and that program, and you would become an expert.
Right.
And that's what you need to do for yourself. Not to have an intellectual understanding that removes you from the situation, but to immerse yourself in it in a way that gives you every option for responding.
Isn't that sort of the nature of depression? For me, it feels like there are no options. That's sort of the closed loop of it.
That's right, when we're identified with it.
Right.
And that's the importance of being able to recognize my authentic nature is not that. My authentic nature does not get depressed.
It's interesting, because my initial immediate knee-jerk reaction is my authentic nature isn't depressed.
Yeah.
But the rest of me is. Isn't that strange?
Uh-huh.
I mean, I understand what you're saying. Really, I've had glimpses, and I understand, but there's a quality of, you know, the challenges of life can be quite difficult.
That's right. When we are identified with a separate self.
Okay.
So that's that movement that we're trying to sort out. So I'm over here identified as a separate self, and life is too hard, it's overwhelming, I'm depressed, I don't want to get out of bed. The work is to be in relationship with ourselves, and that has to be in quotes, right, as we would be able to be with someone else. So this, just a, I think, a parallel example, I don't know. Yesterday, I was working, doing a workout with my trainer. And we were going along, and I'm doing this particular exercise, and the muscle is gone, okay? It's gone. It's not, there's nothing else to give. And she said, okay, one more. And I said, I can't. And she said, of course you can. And I did. Now, if I had been there on my own, let me tell you, I would have quit three reps back.
Right, I understand that.
Yeah. So, now, and she would too, probably, if she were in my place. It's not, you know, it's that identified with the one who is doing whatever it is. Instead of that, stepped aside, outside of the situation, able to see, no, you are buying your limitations. I don't need to. That's where we're going with ourselves.
Right. I'm experiencing the last few weeks that practice has been exacerbating sort of the emotional tenderness, which has been a bit hard, but I'm sticking with it to the degree that I'm capable, I guess.
Yes. And so my encouragement to you is focus on kindness.
I hear that.
It's not saying, okay, we're going to be nice to you because you're inherently inadequate. You know, you can't do this, so we're going to set up special rules for you.
Right.
We know you can do this. It's fine, and you're doing a good job. I'm right here. I'm on your side. I'm rooting for you. This is great. It's very different from indulging or grab your bootstraps, gut it out.
Yeah, the bootstraps one is what I hear most in my head.
That's right.
Yeah, that bootstrap thing.
That's the illusion of a separate self talking. And it talks in terms of you when it talks about you, and it talks in terms of I when you are identified with it.
Right.
So it'll say, well, I'm sorry, I just think this depression is real. You know, based on this and this and this and this. You know, all that Buddhism is a good theory, but this is real life, and it's depressing.
Yeah.
And you can say, aha, there we have heard from the depressed subpersonality.
Right.
Yeah. Or we could say, there we've heard from the depressor subpersonality.
Yeah, I hear all those things. Mm-hmm. It's the challenge is sort of, is again, what we talked about last time is integration, and the more I'm practicing, the more I get glimpses. I get glimpses.
That's right, and that's what we're doing. We're just running those glimpses closer and closer and closer together.
Okay, well, hopefully I can run them a little closer than they have been lately.
Right. Well, and again, you know, part of the kindness is reminding yourself that this is hard work and you're doing it.
I appreciate that. Thanks.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Let us know.
Thank you.
Bye.
Take care.
Thanks for joining us, John. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on KZSU Stanford. If you'd like to talk with us today, you can reach us at 650-723-9010. Sherry, it occurred to me as I was listening to you talk to John, for me, when I do everything that I can for any problem or any issue, there's a real sense of appreciation for myself that is independent of what happens with that issue or problem.
Yes. Yes. And when you are, I think this is what you're saying, when you're willing to kind of pull out all the stops,
yes,
be there for yourself,
yes,
that relationship with yourself is really what you're going for, not the degree of success that you may or may not achieve with some external something or other.
Yes.
Yeah, because we do the things we do, I think most of us do the things we do, so that we'll be all right, so that we'll feel loved, accepted, mm-hmm. like we're doing a good job, like we're a good person, like life is working.
Yes.
So if we are in that kind of relationship with ourselves to begin with, and then life happens within that context, as you're indicating, we win regardless of the
mm-hmm.
outcome.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
yeah.
Because you were talking about kindness, and when there's a process of kindness there, it seems that the content of our life is less important, how that's going.
Oh, absolutely so. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we know that in all kinds of situations in our lives. You're out for a meal with a good friend that you haven't seen for a while. Do you care, really, what the food tastes like? Do you care what the service is like?
Right.
You know, you're there having a good time. If you're not having a good time, then the food had better be extraordinary, and the service had better be exemplary.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. Sherry, I loved your analogy about poking holes in the boat to check the seaworthiness of it.
Yeah. It's the kind of thing, you know, it would be good to pull the boat up on the shore and do that. But ego would do it right out in the middle of the water.
Yes.
And people will say, why would conditioning want to do that? Because if I drown, it's going to drown. And from an Eastern philosophy perspective, it ain't necessarily so.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of karmic energy can just go right on and seek another vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't end just because we do. So we like to point out in Zen practice that only one of us is going to make it through this. It's either going to be me, identified with authentic nature, who I really am, my heart, or egocentric karmic conditioning. If I'm living from authenticity, from true nature, ego is not staying alive.
Mm-hmm.
If it has taken over my life and is sucking the life force out of me, then I don't have a life, whether this body is walking around or not. So it's very serious what we're up against, and the stakes are really high. And so to keep in mind that voice that would poke holes in your boat when you're out in the middle of the ocean is not your friend.
Mm-hmm.
It's very important to get that voice that's talking is not necessarily hoping for your success and well-being.
Mm-hmm.
I tell you it is, but it isn't.
Yes.
Yeah.
And as you talked about at the beginning of the show, an awareness practice is a way to distinguish between those two places.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We do these little experiments. We sit still. We pay attention. And as we go along, we're seeing more and more clearly where that voice is coming from, where those thoughts are coming from. Is this conditioned mind? Is this the voice of suffering? Or is this my heart, my authentic nature? Is this conscious, compassionate awareness in the moment?
Yes.
It seems very difficult to distinguish when we first start looking, but as we go along, it gets easier and easier because one, by and large, is kind, and the other is, by and large, hateful.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the hateful one can get pretty sneaky there, talking to us in nice voices like, oh, go ahead. A bag of potato chips and a six-pack of beer in front of reality TV, that'll really take care of you. You've had a really hard day. You need to be kind to yourself. And after a while, we say, now, is that really the way to be kind to myself? Maybe not.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes. Sherry, I came across a heartwarming story in a magazine I was flipping through recently.
Well, tell us. It's always good to hear a heartwarming story, isn't it?
Yes. There's a gentleman named Henry Landworth, who's a self-made millionaire in the hotel business, and he lives in Florida, and he's built a place called Give Kids the World Village, and it's a place where thousands of terminally ill kids have come, and it's sort of like a theme park, Disneyland place, and everything is free of charge there, and he even flies whole families in to visit. And for him, it's a form of therapy. And he's survived the Holocaust in his early childhood. And he built this about 17 years ago. And sounds
and
like
it's only terminally ill children and their families.
Yes.
Isn't that something?
Yes.
So, boy, if you don't have hair or if you're in a wheelchair or...
Not a problem.
It is not a problem that it's your kind of place.
Yes.
Isn't that good?
Hosted more than 60,000 kids.
Wow.
At the 51-acre Fantasy Village.
Bless his heart, huh?
Yes. Yes. Mm. And this year he won the Jimmy and Rosalind Carter Award for Humanitarian Contributions to the Health of Humankind.
A perfect choice, I can only guess.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yes.
What a wonderful story.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, thank you.
Yes, you're welcome. And it's great to get a perspective on everything that's going on in the world, when for me it seems that sometimes with the media we can get a perspective of everything that's not going well.
Oh, yeah. we can tune in and by the end of kind of a short period of time decide that life isn't worth living.
Yes.
It's just nothing good happening anywhere. And then what's this gentleman's name?
Henry Landworth.
Henry Landworth. And then there's a Henry out there.
Yes.
And all of the folks who are doing everything that they can to make the life experience of these children the best it can be for whatever time they're here.
Yes.
I started off the morning today doing an interview, radio interview, with from a station in Toronto, Canada.
Uh-huh.
And it was a young woman who does a program, I think it's called Animal Voices.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're dealing with all kinds of issues around animals. And as the program went on, she said that most of the listeners are animal issues activists, or
uh-huh.
a lot of them. And one of the things that's so difficult in that world is that there is so much burnout. You know, there's
uh-huh.
that people use anger a great deal of
yes.
the time for their motivation.
Yes.
And then live in a world of what's wrong and anger and resentment and that sort of thing. And then they eventually wear themselves out and lose their ability to continue doing that work. And so we talked about doing the things that we want to do, kind of full circle back to our first email, and I guess in the second one too,
yes.
Doing things that we want to make a difference in the world from a place of conscious compassion and awareness, from a place of kindness. So instead of seeing what's wrong and going after it with fingers pointing, blaming
mm-hmm.
others for this sort of thing, to take the Henry approach. And see something where we would like to make a difference, something that we would like to give our hearts to or our lives to, and then setting about making that happen.
Yes.
It's just such a more pleasant, a more joyful way of being in the world, of interacting with life.
Yes.
So, yeah.
Yes.
That's great.
Sherry, and you're... What you've been talking about there reminds me of something that I think I've heard you talk about before, and for me was a big insight, is that compassion for all means that I'm a part of that.
Yes.
And,
I'm a part of both sides of that, aren't I?
Yes.
I'm a part of the problem.
Yes.
And and therefore it's possible for me to be part of the solution.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, and we talked a little bit about our first precept, the not to lead a harmful life, nor
mm-hmm.
to encourage others to do so. And what a big job it is to, without self-hatred, set about cleaning up our own act.
Mm-hmm.
That there's just so much we can do to take the harmfulness out of our own lives.
Mm-hmm.
It, starting for many of us with self-hatred.
Yes.
With that critical, punishing voice in the head that's constantly there to tell us what we're doing wrong and how we ought to be different, and beginning to work through that, let that go, And then just looking at our lives, all of the ways that we make choices that are toward suffering rather than away from suffering, again, without self-hatred, just noticing those. And as we take away the self-hatred, as we drop that, we will notice more. We'll see at more and more subtle levels how we are contributing to the problems and difficulties of life. As we bring conscious compassion awareness to those things, they begin to fall away, and the next layer is there, and the next layer is there, and the next layer is there. And each time, of course, that we are in touch with a new layer of that kind of suffering within ourselves, we begin to see how that plays out in the larger world, and then maybe there's some kind of contribution that we would like to make, some sort of difference that we might like to put our energies toward.
Yes. And it seems that when we approach it in that way, we're taking care of ourselves as we're doing good for the world.
Yes. And then there isn't burnout. We don't need anger to motivate us. Love can motivate us much more happily and beautifully than anger ever was able to motivate us.
Yes.
You know, I want to do this because my heart is moved, because I'm touched, mm-hmm. because I want to make a contribution, because it makes me feel better.
Yes.
Is that selfish? I don't think so. You know, why do you want to feed children who are hungry? Because it makes my heart happy.
Yes.
I don't have to hate the people who are making economic choices and decisions that leave some people in poverty. That doesn't feed that hungry child.
Yes.
But making an effort to feed that hungry child makes my heart happy.
Mm-hmm.
There. Let's do that. Let's just go out there and do the things that make our hearts happy.
Yes.
And I think one of the things we talked about with the animal situation is that when somebody encounters that kind of attitude of mind, I do this because it makes my heart happy. I want to do this because it brings joy to my life, and
mm-hmm.
and I think it's helpful to someone else as well. People tend to want to join.
Yes.
You know, they kind of, well, I want to do something that makes my heart happy. How do I do that? And then it's just, okay, well, what do you want to give to? What do you want to work on? What do you want to, what's the kind of difference you would like to see happen in the world, you know?
Yes.
Do that.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And it can be the same sort of experiment that we were talking about earlier with the, for an hour, I'm going to do these things.
Yes.
You know, I can just do it and watch what happens. What does it set off? What kind of chaos does it create in the world of suffering for me to decide that I'm going to participate or contribute in the way that we're talking about?
Yes.
I'm sure. Now, it sounds like Henry had some money to bring to this.
He had a little money to bring, yes.
Yeah, and but I bet he didn't have enough to do what he needed to do.
Right.
And so he set about doing whatever was necessary to create this, and that
yes.
probably meant involving other people and
yes.
and having them be touched and inspired and want to jump on board and, you know, want their hearts to be happy too. So
yes.
you know, that's a big part of it too, is enrolling other people. I mean, I'm off to Italy, I'm off to Assisi, and I'm there because I have this idea of a particular kind of peace center that I think is meant to happen there in Assisi.
Yes.
And it makes my heart happy to
yes.
to do that. And,
yes.
you know, I'm going to enroll everybody on the planet that I can reach in participating in this thing, because I
yes.
think it'll make their hearts happy, too.
Yes.
And so there we go.
Yes.
Yeah.
The Assisi Peace Center.
The Assisi Peace Center. I understand you can actually type that into your computer and get a little link that, you know, we've got a destination there. And pretty soon we're going to have some pictures up and
yes.
more information, and I'll be sending back information from there and telling people about who I'm meeting and what's happening and what the developments are, and by golly, we'll just do it.
Yes.
All of us who want to do it, that's what we'll do. And, you know, I'm open to be enrolled in other things, too.
So if
people, you know, come up with something that makes their heart happy, I want to hear. I want to hear what they're
yes.
doing, and if there's some way I can contribute to that, then by golly, I want to do that.
Great.
Yeah, we'll start a club. Make your heart happy club.
And people can go on the web to livingcompassion.org.
Yeah.
And learn a little bit about what's going on there.
Absolutely, they can do that. And
yes,
they can also learn about our Zimbabwe Vulnerable Children's Project and,
yes,
and all they ever wanted to know about the radio show and how to contribute to that.
Yes.
Because people often don't realize that this is a, by golly, we accept contributions for this little endeavor as well. And
yes,
all kinds of things that we're into that people can participate in if they choose to.
Yes, to support the archives. That's really great. Mm-hmm. Sherry, we're at the end of our hour here.
It just flew by as usual.
It just flew by as usual. It's been a pleasure for me.
And for me, Michael. Thank you very much for doing everything that you do to make this happen. And a special thank you to our pal Jay back there in the control booth.
Yes.
As always, making this happen. And I understand Nikki's back there assisting him.
Yes, very ably assisting him as well.
Yeah, getting the callers on the air and like that, we appreciate it.
Yes, I'd like to thank Nikki and Jay, our caller today, all of our listeners. You've been listening.
Our emailers.
Our emailers as well.
Yeah.
You've been listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. I'm your host, Michael Gray. You can email us in the meantime at openair@kzsu.org. And you can listen to the archives at sherryhuber.com. That's spelled CHERIHUBER.com. And we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Michael.
Thanks, Sherry.
Good night.
Good night.